You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's podcast, we talk about the moral confusion of gender identity, and we also talk about community and heating your home with wood. So yes, it does sound a little bit eclectic, and it is, but the important topic of community has hit us square in the face in a good way up here in northern Idaho, and I also want to talk to you about heating your home with wood. On today's worldview segment, I want to talk about gender identity. Now, how this came up was actually, I was talking to my wife, and we were discussing my sister-in-law, who's going to college, and she took a course called Gender Communications. Now, she didn't really understand what this course was about. She thought it was going to be something much like covering men are from Mars, women are from Venus, you know, that kind of thing. But she was in for a shock on the first day when the first question that was asked was, how many genders are there? And in her mind, she was thinking, well, there are two genders. And someone actually said that, and I think the instructor or whatever says, no, there are 17 different genders. So this really struck me as strange and kind of bizarre. So I did a little bit of research on it, and I did a Google search for how many genders are there. And the answer is amazing, because it really is all over the place. You just do a quick search and you'll find 3 genders, 7 genders, 51 genders, 56 genders, and even 63 different types of genders, or different ways of classifying gender identity issues. Now, I want to be clear, as Christians, we need to be sensitive to anybody who struggles with gender confusion or even something like same-sex attraction. We're not to be overly offensive or rude in this way, but we need to be clear about it. And so apparently Facebook now has, and the sources that I'm using are a little bit off, but somewhere around between 51 and 56 gender identity options of varying capacities. And I honestly, looking through some of these, I did not have any idea. I was familiar with several of them, but a lot of these I were not familiar with. So I just want to go through just a few. We're not going to go through all of them. And so when we're talking about sex, gender, and gender terms, sex is usually referred to as the biological configuration with regards to chromosomes and hormones, reproductive organs, etc. And then gender, per this article, says it's more about your personal sense of who you are. And this is where the breakdown starts to occur, because it really just becomes about how you feel and not who you are. Okay, so we have these varying gender terms. Agender, for example, is someone who does not identify with any sort of gender identity at all. This term may also be used by someone who intentionally has no recognizable gender presentation. It's very similar to androgynous, who is someone who neither identifies with nor presents as a man or a woman. So it's very, very similar. There's bigender, which is an identity that is a combination of two genders, but not necessarily a 50-50 combination. So 70-30, 80-20, 60-40, etc. Okay? Sometimes when I read this kind of thing, I feel like I'm in a bizarre kind of spinoff of 1984. But here we are. This is the culture we live in, and the things that we actually deal with on a day-to-day basis. This can also be referred to as gender fluid. So gender fluidity, of you starting to see that term come up more and more. And that's basically where somebody, they identify as either male or female or neutral on different days. So on one day they may identify as a man, the next day they may identify as a woman, or they may identify as neither. So just imagine, for those of you in the military or have military experience, on one day you're a man, and on the next day you identify as a woman. So you're getting ready to take your physical fitness test, just identify as a woman on that day and you'll get a higher score. But anyway, so also there's this new category called CIS, and I think that's how you pronounce it. It's CIS, and what they do is they put that in front of, so it's, for example, cis female, cis male, cis man, cis woman, cisgender. And what that means, and get this, is someone who is not trans or does not have a gender diverse identity. So in other words, a man, according to this, would be a cis man. A male would be a cis male, etc. So we now have to not identify a man as a man. We need to identify them as cis man. And on and on. So cisgender man, cisgender woman, etc. Gender fluid, we talked about. That's, again, somebody who's just, it changes from day to day or week to week or month to month. Gender nonconforming, gender questioning, gender variant, gender queer, intersex, neither or other, and on and on. There's also pangender. Pan means every or all. So this is another identity label that just challenges binary gender. So in other words, not he or she. And sometimes you'll see Z, or people referred to as they, when we're talking about pronouns. What all of this boils down to is an intense amount of moral confusion. God has made us in his image, male and female, he made us. And although people may be genuinely confused at times on how they feel or what they may be attracted to, etc., we are still made in the image of God in a way that we are male and female. In today's main topic, I want to talk about community and heating with wood. So I know those kind of sound odd together, but there's a reason for it. So we come to today at a time where things are really starting to get cold here in northern Idaho, or at least turning the corner. A little bit of chill in the air, chill in the bones, and it's time. And for the last couple of days, we've fired up our stove at least for a period throughout the day, and then we usually don't run it through the night or anything like that. But we're getting to that period, so we're laying in firewood, making sure we have plenty of that. And that brings us to also talking about community. And the reason I bring that together is because we had some folks from around here come over and help us out with getting in our firewood today. And it was really brought on a sense of true community for us. And it's something I've thought about a lot lately. And having that community is very important. You know, one of the things that we're doing up here is trying to teach people self-sufficiency and the different businesses that we're doing. But when we say self-sufficiency, what we're not saying is we're going to do it all absolutely by ourselves. What it means is that we are going to be able to do lots of things ourselves, or we're going to know how to be able to do them without necessarily going to Costco or anywhere else. It's relying on your neighbors. It's relying on your community. And we've had the opportunity to see that. We've had neighbors up here. And when I say neighbors, I mean people that may live within a couple miles or so. That's what we call a neighbor around here. come and offer to help, to show us different things, because we are absolutely learning up here every day. Give us help when we need it, and in turn we do the same. And so when we first got here, I was still in Okinawa in the Marine Corps, and my family was here. My family didn't have to buy eggs, for example. We were given duck eggs, as much as they could eat, and that was just a wonderful thing, and just a nice sense of community. And it's reciprocal, because we've gone to them and offered to be able to help them in some ways, whether or not they accept help or need it. It doesn't really matter. But we have done that also for other neighbors, and they have in turn helped us. So we had a firewood splitting party, and so we had a couple chainsaws going this morning with a neighbor and some of his children that came up, and we got in and just a little under 3 hours, four truckloads of wood, of a bunch of trees that were already on the deck, so we didn't have to fell them. But we did have to, make rounds, and we had four teenage boys splitting for a couple hours. So it was really great, great sense of community. And we were constantly thinking of ways where we can help each other out. And this, there's another point of this in community, a lot of things we don't think of, where each family, they buy all their own things. Well, up here, you can't necessarily do that. Not everyone can afford their own tractor, their own snowplow, their own chicken defeatherer, which is kind of a great example. A chicken defeatherer, brand new, costs about $1,200. Well, you have to raise and process a lot of chickens to make that worthwhile, or it will take you years and years and years to make that a worthwhile purchase. But what if three or four families got together and said, okay, we'll purchase this chicken defeatherer. We'll all have use of it, because we'll all probably only need it 4 to 6 times a year. We will type up a very simple contract, if you will, and just say, hey, if somebody wants out or they're moving or whatever, then the other families will just buy them out. So it's not such a big purchase that it wouldn't be hard to do. Yet, it really kind of brings in the sense of working on with each other's talents and abilities, and spreading the cost of that out. And so, if they would voluntarily go into something like this, it would be a good step in the right direction. Otherwise, there's of course barter, and I'll just be upfront for my business. I was able to go to a family and offer to do a design on their property, and in turn, they have been helping us out in particular ways. It's just an exchange of, hey, I've got this talent, I can help you out with it. Well, and then in turn, they're helping us out. So that really develops and builds community, because the reality is you just can't do it on your own. Even if you think of Little House on the Prairie, even they didn't do everything by themselves. They still needed supplies, etc. Okay, so this hopefully you'll catch a sense of community and how we're trying to build that up here. That's an important part of what we're doing. And I think one of the biggest, if you want to talk about preparedness, one of the best things you can do, even if it's just exchanging of talents and abilities in order to get things done, or if it's even home and family protection, knowing your neighbors, building community among your neighbors is probably the most important thing you can do. And so that brings us to this talk about wood. And it was through community that we're able to put in a bunch of wood today that puts us in a much better position than we were in. We were okay, but we still had a lot of work to do. Now we have maybe just a little bit of work to do with regards to wood. So heating your home with wood, especially in northern climates, or if you whether you live there or not, maybe someday you will. But I want to start with a quote from Aesop's Fables, and this is from 1692, and it says, "It is with our passions as it is with fire and water. They are good servants, but bad masters." And so that's an important thing, isn't it true? When fire is out of control or water is out of control, they are bad masters. And we are definitely their servants when they rage. And so we must be careful with fire as far as your equipment and burning and having that plan because from a preparedness perspective, the most likely thing to happen to you is probably a house fire. And so we heat with wood up here, and there's a lot of our neighbors here that we've met that exclusively heat with wood. In fact, there's some that don't even have a backup system. We do here at on our property. We primarily heat with wood, and our backup system is a furnace, and it's powered by propane. Yeah, but my goal is not to turn it on at all. I turn it on once a month on a maintenance day on, say, the first of the month, just to make sure everything's working and make sure that that it's functioning. But heating with wood is an important thing, and probably the most important thing is making sure that the wood that you have is seasoned properly. So there are lots of different types of woods, and it's really based on density. But from talking to a lot of veterans who use wood all the time and who have for decades, it's the seasoning of that wood that's most important. Okay, so you have a good hardwood, or even a soft wood that is, that traditionally is not ideal to burn. If it's seasoned well, you can still burn it. So we have a plethora of different types of wood up here, but we just right now we happen to have a lot of cedar. And cedar is something that can certainly be used for fire, but it's not ideal. It burns fast and it burns hot. But it's great for making kindling, and it's great for fire starters. So what we've kind of come to, since we have so much of it, is that we would about the first hour of our burn, it was we use cedar to get everything going nice and hot, get a bed of coals going. Then we'll throw on the hardwood that has the higher BTUs and that lasts longer, that burns. It still burns hot, but what it does for you mostly is it burns longer. So especially if you're loading it at night. But here's a couple questions. Should we be burning wood? Is it an environmentally appropriate fuel? Absolutely. It really is. There's a lot of misinformation around with wood, and certainly not a fan of clear cutting forests or anything like that. But a responsible use of the forest to heat the home is probably much better than using something like coal-fired electricity or anything like that. Because the bottom line is if you have a good, efficient wood-burning stove or rocket mass heater, which we'll talk about in just a minute, the only thing, you're not putting out a lot of smoke at all because that stuff's getting burned and reburned, and you're getting high efficiency from it. And what you're really just putting out it is not bad at all. It's not bad. So it's just part of the natural cycle. You're releasing carbon dioxide, which trees absorb carbon dioxide from the air as they grow, as they incorporate that carbon into their structure. So there's nothing wrong with it at all. And in the appropriate place, especially up here in the north, where you couldn't stop the forest from growing if you tried, it is absolutely an appropriate fuel to power your home, at least with heat. And to be honest, we could just use the trees that fall over from storms every year and probably stay in wood for our entire lives and not have any problem. And in fact, we have to do more cutting than we actually need just for the health of the forest, for other reasons, or for making more paddocks, that type of thing, which we'll talk about in later podcasts. So is heating with wood destructive of the forest? No, it's not. It's part of the natural cycle. Trees fall over all the time. And yes, they do provide that organic matter that makes the forest continue, but there's so much organic matter in forests that a lot of times it's actually makes them healthier. And it also protects against fire hazards, that type of thing. Now, I'm not a fan of clear cutting and cleaning out everything underneath the forest and, you know, quote unquote, parking it out. But some of that is okay. And so I think it's perfectly healthy to do that. And then the other thing is we want to get the most from our firewood. And so, again, that goes back into seasoning it, which the ideal moisture content of firewood doesn't matter the kind. Again, there are better kinds and there are worse kinds, but the moisture content that you're looking for is about 15 to 20%. Okay, when certain types of wood are freshly cut, they can have up to 50% moisture content. You want to get that down below 20%. 15 to 20% is optimal, and you're getting the most efficiency out of your wood. Otherwise, if it's wet, if it's green, you're running into a couple of problems. One, all that energy is being used just to evaporate the water, or a lot of it. You're also building up creosote in your flue, and all of those can cause problems. You can have creosote fires in your flue. That could be a big problem. So that needs to be thought of. You probably need to take a look at that either every year, maybe every other year, getting that cleaned out, whether you do it yourself or hire it out. But that's very important. And then getting enough wood in. So how much wood do you need? Well, that depends. And it really depends on how much square feet you're trying to heat, and how much, you know, how efficient is your stove. There's lots of variables. I'd say the average up here is talking to some of the people, they go through about 4 cords of wood every winter, you know, and that goes all the way from right about now where you're doing the occasional burn all the way through, you know, all the way into April, maybe doing some burning in April. Now, what they suggest also is to use your, I don't know, I guess your less high quality woods. So your faster burning, your hotter burning woods, soft woods in the fall and in the spring, and then save your hardwoods for the winter. So if you have that kind of diversity available to you, that might be a good strategy. But getting a really good wood burning stove or a rocket mass heater will help tremendously as well. Now, rocket mass heaters, and you can look this up, and this will definitely require its own episode as well, but is an extremely efficient way of using wood. And what it, just very quickly, what it does is it uses thermal mass, sometimes people will call it a thermal battery, to heat or to trap all that heat that's coming off of the flue. So imagine a stove pipe that doesn't just run straight up out of a stove or a fireplace, but it goes out sideways, wraps around, and then goes out. Now, that place where that heat travels through is encased in some kind of thermal mass. A lot of people will use cob. You can use water in different ways, but let's just use cob as an example. Well, all that heat goes into the cob, and then as that exhaust continues and goes out finally to the outside, the heat is all the way down to about 120 degrees, sometimes even less, sometimes 100 degrees. So it's getting, all that heat is being sucked into that cob, and then that cob then emanates heat or radiates heat for up to 24 hours, depending on how long you burn. So it's like a thermal battery. So you're getting a little bit of radiant heat off the actual fire itself, and the rest of the heat's being stored in. And by the time the exhaust goes outside, it's very low temperature as opposed to a regular fireplace where, you know, your temperature is going out, out the top can be 180, 190 degrees, 200 degrees. Okay, so that's a lot of heat being wasted. So that's one way of doing it. But anyway, so the goal is efficiency in your wood, your fuel. The other advantage you have for a rocket mass heater is that you can burn just about anything. Some people have actually heated their homes in winter using junk mail, using just I don't know, kind of garbage type stuff that they've burned. And because it's so effective at reburning via this method, and again, I'm skipping over a lot of the engineering of it, that also what's coming out of it's nothing but carbon dioxide. I mean, it's just even some moisture content. There's nothing negative being spewed into the environment. Another interesting idea for getting your wood is coppicing. If you never heard of coppicing, it's just a technique available of that reproduces wood. So certain types of trees, if you cut them down, they will branch out with sprouts that shoot up. They basically regrow that tree. So a lot of trees will do this. And so it's just, again, it's that method. And it was this thing, this method has been used for thousands of years. In fact, Henry VIII mandated that fences be built in order to protect his coppicing force throughout England. And so, again, you're able to cut down trees, knowing that they're going to sprout and reshoot up with more firewood. So if you had a fuel wood stand somewhere that was large enough, then you could just cycle through it and continuously get firewood from that. And you could do that with quality wood, like maple, beech, birch, oak, cherry, those types of things all will coppice very well. Now, some take longer than others to get to a point where you can cut them down, but again, so you could manage this, and it'd be a great way to again to get your fuel in. Other than that, if you have enough land, you could probably just, like we do here, we have enough deadfall that we probably don't need to cut down a whole lot of trees, or if we do, we are certainly not. I mean, it's totally sustainable. Yeah. Our grandkids will be able to heat their homes with fuel wood as well, without reducing this forest at all. So that's a good thing. So those are some of the reasons why it's good to heat your home with wood if you have that ability. And just to give you kind of an example of the types of wood that are better than others. You get into your hardwoods like hickory and oak and maple, beech and birch. And then that kind of works down into your softer woods like Douglas fir, white birch, red alder, hemlock, poplar, and your pine and cedars and things like that. So those would be your soft woods. So they're going to be shorter burns, usually higher temperatures, and then your hardwoods are your longer burning woods. That also, for your hardwoods, they also take longer to season. So a lot of times, you need to some of your hardwoods might require an entire year of seasoning, and that's seasoned well. So that's where they have airflow and they have exposure to wind and sun and those kinds of things, which is ideally what you would do. So that's just a little bit on fuel wood itself. We could go into the types of the BTUs and that kind of thing. But that, I think it's more important that you understand the seasoning aspect and just in general, the hardwoods versus softwoods, when you should use them. You can, like we do, we use a combination. So we start our fires first hour or so with the softer woods and then we burn the hardwoods. But a lot of that's going to depend on what we have. for fuel. So right now we have just a ton of cedar. And so again, we'll use that. And then as everything's going real well, we'll put on our hardwoods and have good heat. And it's just really enjoyable heat that way as well. We really love the fact that we have the ability to heat our home with fire. Now, I will say though that for us in our basement, we don't have a heat source down there other than the furnace. So it's either no heat or that propane backup. So our eventual plan is to put another wood heat source down in the basement, and that'll also help for the entire house as well. So we're looking at a rocket mass heater or a very efficient wood stove. So more to come on that. Our scripture for today comes from 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So as Christians, humility must begin with a sense of subordination to God in Christ. That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.